We are ramping it up here on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show as we step into round two in the National Hockey League. Welcome to the National Hour on Real Kipper and Bourne. We are live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary, right across your Sportsnet platforms. This hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. Kipper Hill's Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. In a few minutes, we'll welcome in Steve Alliquette, analyst with the Rangers, CEO, Clearsight Analytics, with his regularly scheduled Tuesday.
On a Monday. It's Monday. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not Tuesday.
Why I thought it was Tuesday.
Can we now?
Nothing gets by me.
Can we please talk about Jets now? I felt bad not saying the whole hour. Yes.
We will get into Jets talk. And of course, Connor Hellebuyck will lead Valley's, I'm sure, shtick. But by all regards here, go at it here. Where do you, first of all, as bad as Hellebuyck was in the series, it pales in comparison to just the overall entertainment value we had last night.
They overcame every hurdle thrown at them. They had the potential Hart Trophy winning goaltender play not very well, and they overcame it. They had injuries to Scheifele. They had injuries to Morrissey, Ehlers, Velarde. They had those beatings in St. Louis. They were down with 2 minutes left. They won the series.
They played hard. And they, Pionk's not the biggest guy, but even prior to the game-winning goal, I'm watching this guy go get pucks back. I'm watching him rub out bigger guys than him along the walls and then coming up with pucks and then skating them out. Mm-hmm. It's like this guy was not to be denied, as many of his teammates felt, I'm sure.
Pionk highlight pack. What a block there. That was great.
And then the poke check.
Really good. Really good.
He was all MVP world for me last night.
Most minutes in a game played by a defenseman in a playoff game since 1999.
The game-winning goal 46. Went off of Lowry's pant leg.
It did. Pant leg,
Did?
Yeah.
I've watched it 100 times.
It was fairly subtle, but there's no question that it changed directions a couple times.
Yeah.
I didn't think. They got that bounce in the what did they get the 3-2 goal?
Off Suter's stick with about 2 minutes left.
I thought they didn't have.
That was a power play, was it not?
No, was it? I don't think so.
It was a goalie out. I think it was just goalie.
A goalie out. Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right. You're right.
That was a very leafy game seven. Just the way that felt with the two softies, or even three softies. You want to have the argument with Hellebuyck, them not being able to generate much, them not being able to score. They get the bounce. They get right on the offensive. And what can you say about that tip, man? That tip was unbelievable. The first one's amazing, and then the Perfetti one to tie it.
That the puck, when it goes back to Ehlers with about 6 seconds left, and he doesn't panic slap the second one, and he whips it through the seam, incredible. This tip, by the way, 100 pucks, I don't think you could do it. If you sat there with 100 pucks, I don't think you could
do it. No, I could, 1,000 pucks.
All the credit to Cole Perfetti for sure here, but Kyle Connor has to sell it, and he has to put it enough mustard on it, and it has to be flat, right? The redirect doesn't happen unless the puck's in a certain spot, flat.
Really good.
That Kyle Connor here, you're first of all, wingers aren't supposed to lead in scoring. It's supposed to be your centerman. And we're going to get into Rantanen a little later because we're going to have a really good conversation on Rantanen. I promise you that.
Yeah.
But between him and Connor now, they lead the league in scoring here. And wingers aren't supposed to do that, but these guys are so good.
Connor's unbelievable.
You don't, so fast. To your point.
He's also defensively, at times.
To your point, you don't expect a pass there. No. There's 3 seconds after the game. You're selling out.
I don't know if he fanned on it or if he meant to do it or what.
You're expecting that puck to go towards the net. Yeah. Even Falk, he didn't go to the right spot because he's not expecting. Right. Watch where he goes. He's expecting a shot there.
Yeah, he may be trying to get that just to Perfetti in front and hoping to get a stick off. By the way, also doesn't touch the back of the net. Straight under the bar.
I can't. I'm a fan. That is, if you're in the building.
That must have been mayhem.
That's the greatest. How can it be better than that? You can win, go on, and you can win games, and you could even win the cup. But that moment where you're 3 seconds away from your season being over.
Yeah, that's franchise iconic moment.
That's unbelievable, man. And they're going nuts in there. I'm so, like, I don't really get happy for other Canadian fan bases, but I am thrilled for the Jets fans
today.
That's
nice, Sam.
Thrilled.
So,
thrilled.
Again, we have to be reminded, like, all of this is still the first round.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, it doesn't matter what round that is.
No, but if they lose, does it come back like that, cushion the blow?
You always have that, Kip. No matter what.
It helps.
I mean, but you're looking at this like we yelled at each other on Friday about the Ottawa thing where you're like, you didn't care about it and I was excited. Fans are allowed to be excited about this thing. That's an all-time sports moment.
I'm not saying that they're not excited.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that you shouldn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
All I'm just saying is that we are talking about the best team. Right?
Yeah, they were the President's Trophy winners.
The best team.
Yeah, but they didn't have that, all their horses.
That needed double overtime against a wild card team. And perhaps if they're not on top of their game, they may lose in the second round. I'm sitting there going, is that good enough for the fan base, though, Sammy?
Was that a smoothie that flew up in the air there on that original angle? What was that?
Or
off the
is this still still pressure on this team to go deep?
Of course there is.
Okay.
And I'm sure they shouldn't have been in that. But when you're 3 seconds left in your season and you don't lose.
My guy Davis Payne did a full fist pump.
Everybody had them written off, right?
They're done.
They were done.
I mean, they're done.
Okay.
Look at that.
We haven't yet got into the Connor Hellebuyck story of this series. So let's bring in the ultimate expert on a Monday. Why I thought it was Tuesday. No idea. But it's Valley. Valley, that's how strong your presence is. I just look at you and I go, Tuesday.
Yeah. My reputation enters the room before I do. I got it.
Thanks for joining us. Let's start right away with Connor Hellebuyck and the series that he had. And if you were to look at that numbers today, you would have thought Winnipeg would have gotten swept in four straight. Yeah. Like, how big of a bullet did Connor get, you know, in terms of
dodging
it and through 19 other guys called teammates?
Yeah, you know what, Kipper? When I was watching him on the bench last night, you can only imagine what was going through his head. And then to come back and have to turn the channel, can you imagine? He was probably rehearsing what he was going to have to say
in
the post-game presser. You know, and then have to be able to turn the channel to go out and make a save. He didn't face a lot of high danger or any difficulty in the overtime either, so it wasn't really an opportunity for him to show. St. Louis had one high danger chance in the double overtime. That was it, one. So it really wasn't anything that he could actually lift the team's spirits on. He allowed 11 more goals than he should have during the series. You know, so that's an outrageous number. Nobody's even close to it. When you look at the bottom five guys, I actually sent a tweet out to you guys before the show. And the one thing that I was looking at, here it is right there. So when you round up the 10, 5, 7, call it 11, the bottom five guys actually, and sorry for Stolarz being on the list, a few red flags about Stolarz. We're going to get there later on. But the top guys, too, like it's an Allmark Vezina Trophy winner, a Vasilevsky Vezina Trophy winner, Hellebuyck Malti Vezinas, another one this year. So the top guys are at the bottom of this list. The guys at the top of the list that, you know, showed well but weren't able to even to press through is Markstrom. Anderson, I don't know where he is right now, if his parachute worked or if he's at 50,000 feet. I don't know where he is. Gustafsson, I thought, was going to have a chance to steal a series, because I think that highly of him. And, you know, you can see Binnington there. And, you know, one thing I was really wondering about was just how Hellebuyck was getting beat in the series. And, you know, one thing I did tweet at you guys a few weeks ago that we actually never got around to talking about, it was a points of contact pitcher. And there's different numbers on this sheet of paper that I send to goalies that I work with. And it's a way that you can rehearse making saves. And excuse me, you can do it when you're looking at the net from distance from faceoff dot or distance above faceoff dot, because it's a different save. So when Hellebuyck gets beat by Foxa last night, it's over his glove. And it was the 11th time in the series that he had been beaten over the high glove. One thing that he's doing right now that he must repair for the next round is that he's going down with his right knee first. So he's actually trying to drive his arm up to make a save with momentum rather than when the players get dots down on you using that shoulder and elbow. And he does that during the regular season. So it's just something that he's having difficulty with right now. You'll see his right side. Oh, this is not the play. But anyhow, when you see him allowing the goal that is the Foxa goal,
yep,
it's one where I'm looking at it and I'm saying, like, there's no way that he can continually make this error and have success in the next round and beyond. I think it's going to be an issue for him. He's getting beat too frequently on the clear-sighted shots.
Yeah, in, you know, that Foxa one right here. No,
that's the Joseph goal right here.
Right, but the Foxa one, he's not really square, right? Like, he's kind of at an angle and twisting, and it just feels like the, you know, is this fixable for him? When he goes back and look at tape, can you 2 days from now, 3 days from now, fix it?
You know what it would be, Borny? It's funny because where he got beat on that goal was really like a warm-up spot for all goalies before practice begins. The one thing you want to establish is that you have a sound standing stance, and then when you go down, you're actually driving both knees down so you can pitch forward. And the fact that he was in a spot where, this is the way we would say it if we're looking at video, Borny, practice video, because you look so big from the perspective of the puck, it's almost like you have to get out of the way for the puck to get by you. And what you're saying is what I'm saying, which he really contorted his body down and around to try and chase that puck, essentially getting out of the way. If you had him standing on his feet with a video camera behind the puck, you'd say there's nowhere to shoot. But if you're trying to get out of the way and momentum and make a save, you can actually physically get your body out of the way and open up net for shots from those angles.
You're watching and listening to Steve Alliquette on this special edition Monday as we start round two. So I didn't like the Joseph goal at all, and I tweeted, pull him. Just as simple as that. And
is that the first opinion tweeted to you in like 10 yes. years? I couldn't believe it.
There was the fear that there'd be another bad goal, which there was, I think, with Foxa.
Yeah.
Yet they made the decision that go big or go home. This is our guy. And listen, it turned out well enough that he looked and played the part well enough to shut the door and get the win in double overtime. But how hard of a decision is that to pull a guy of that stature out of the net?
Well, I think you lose him for the next round if you're thinking that there's a possibility you get a comeback. I just don't know how well he fares against Dallas. Like, Dallas created so much offense in that series against Colorado. How do you think it's going to go for Hellebuck? Look, this is a long road for him, and it's funny because if you look at goalie coaches in the NHL, guys, I really feel like they're mechanics. If they see something off, it usually isn't so glaringly big at this stage of the game. It's, you know, your feet squareness. You might be going down one side early instead of coming down sound. But to me, every play at the net is a mystery. Now, I thought that he did a pretty decent job of looking, let's say, sound or measured in the overtime. But again, he wasn't really called upon. I was waiting for St. Louis just to create one scoring chance, and they just really couldn't break through. They stopped skating. Like, yeah. I loved them in the first three periods. And then all of a sudden, they stopped pounding away. And I think they actually let the D off the hook. I mean, they were thin last night. And one thing we talked about a lot with Winnipeg this year during Jets talk is that they don't have the biggest D. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that we saw in this series. A lot of rebounds and a lot of broken plays ended up in the back of the net and had Hellebuck swimming a lot. I don't think it's going to be good in this Dallas series. I see there's too much here. Again, I wasn't hanging my hat on Hellebuck anyway, but now, boy, oh boy, 11 more goals than he should have allowed in the first round. I think that's outstanding that they even won.
The only thing that could help them out then is if the other goalie struggles a little bit too. What are your thoughts on where Ottinger's game is at?
So it's funny. So I was looking at rebounds again because my big thing is that when you lose your posture, you start spitting pucks out a lot.
Okay.
And this is the naughty list from the first round of rebounds, okay? He'd allowed 17 rebounds that resulted in shots on goal, but when your team can come back and help you, you don't always pay a price for a bad rebound. That's the way it works with goaltending. But there were 30 rebounds that he allowed in that first round series where I would like to have him control the puck. Controlling the puck means putting it in the corner, putting it up on the glass, or freezing it, absorbing it, being like Velcro and accepting it, receiving the puck. These are on shots where he has clear view from outside the slot area. That's how you measure a goalie with rebound control. And I'll tell you what, guys, we're going to watch Stolarz tonight. If these are coming off of him, those are the red flags where you're like, okay, he doesn't have his timing. He's not seeing it right now. Pucks are coming off him that should be kept. So any shot where he has clear view tonight, Stolarz, on any shot that he has clear view outside the slot area, that is a puck that's not just stopped, it's controlled. The top five guys from worst down, Ottinger in the first round, I said 30, Stolarz with 26, Mackenzie Blackwood who's out, Kemper who's out, and Markstrom who's out. So if you look like a goalie where you're kind of blocking more shots that you should be coming down with, and that's the key, you want to come down with the puck. If it's coming at your body, which is your biggest receiving surface, you should be coming down with the puck. If it's a puck that's at your glove, it should be squeezed. Like you hear in the NFL, if it's touching a receiver's hands, they expect a catch there. Well, you do from your goaltender as well. So I'm going to be looking for that tonight because that was something where I was a little iffy on Stolarz during the Ottawa series.
Okay, just to stick with Stolarz for a second here, where do you attribute that to? Is it mental? Is it physical? Is it a guy that's never been there before and there's a stress factor here? Has the last few days been enough for you to reset? Would you have ever thought about Joseph Woll in game one? Where do you want to go?
You know, I didn't think about Woll until Sammy texted to me, and I was pretty quick to say no to that. And then I spent the next 2 days looking at certain things, and now I'm kind of on the fence, which means there's a leash here. It's not a short leash, but there's a leash here. Well, let's pay attention to it. I'll start with making sure that he has his timing. If he has his timing, he's going to be able to move out of his save. If he is not receiving the puck on the first save well, he will end up on his stomach or on his ass, both of which are bad news. Or the side, which is also bad news, especially for a big guy. So if he's coming down hard with the puck, making contact, tracking down, moving out of his save, being able to recover and keep his play, those are all very good signs. Rebounds, the ones that I just discussed, should not be coming out. All plays that are at the point, he should be able to battle long enough and fight because that's where the real battle in this game is. Nobody had more screens last year in the regular season than the Florida Panthers. They're a net front team. They're going to be dogs down there. So it's going to be very, and they recover pucks better than anybody. Last year, first in offensive zone recovered pucks. This year, first in recovered pucks in the offensive zone, coming off of scoring chances. So they're going to keep coming. And this is going to be a real possession-based series. If they have that ozone time, guys, you know he's 240 pounds. He's got to beat the pass. That's his game. Explode off the pass. Stop. Push. Stop. If it's below the goal line, he's going to be down in the reverse over and over. Look, if I'm Florida, that's what I'm trying to accomplish with a big guy, to wear him down. It's a boxing match. So, yeah, I'm going to be watching closely, and I'll be available by text. I'll let you know my thoughts.
Sounds like a lot of work doing all that pushing.
I'm exhausted just listening to you.
So we
it's the rule of the game for these guys at this stage, guys. The harder you can work and the smarter you can work before the shot, the easier it's going
to
be.
That makes me feel like Woll should get games for them too, because it sounds like it's very tiring to play goaltender.
I've told you, boys. 300 shots during the game, during practices. Believe me, it wears on you all season long.
So we talked Hellebuck, and then said, "How's the guy across the ice from him?" Just talked Stolarz. How's the guy across the ice from him? What are your thoughts on Sergei Bobrovsky right now?
Come on, he's getting old.
He's no good anymore, Valley.
Come on, Valley, give us. He's too old.
All right, Bob. Here's what I've got for you. Over the gloves. 7 of 11 in the first round over the hands. All right, now here's where It's hard because you need a little bit of time and space to get these chances.
Mm-hmm.
Tampa only had 10 time and space chances from the slot area in the first round against Florida. It's not easy to get freed up against these guys. That's the challenge. It's not just about getting to Bob. It's can you have the ability to elevate? Now, take this into consideration because I went through this last week. I'm a left-handed shot. When I'm out shooting on the goalies and working with them, I don't want to be out there shooting. I want to train them. I have a righty and typically a lefty that I hire to come out and shoot on these guys. Well, my lefty doesn't show up, and we've got to do one-timers from the left side of the ice on a pass from below the goal line. The drill that we do is the first three shots are five holes, so the goalie gets the timing. The second group of three are anywhere. I'm trying to elevate the puck. Nobody's on me. Nobody's defending me. I'm trying to elevate the puck. Well, it's funny because it dawns on me that it's not that easy just to elevate it. Like, I'm trying to get it up, and it's, am I using the wrong stick? Do I not have the right posture? I was trying to get the puck up. When I'm seeing a scoring chance right now in the NHL, and it's a one-timer like the one I'm describing from low to high into the slot area, sometimes guys don't get it up because they don't have the skill to get it up, as in the case for me, or you just can't because people are clamping down on you and you can't get it up. The point I want to make is that if Bobrovsky faces a shot that's on the ice that is not five hole, you are just feeding into his game because he's going to stop all of those. Mm-hmm. Whether it's an east to west play, it's a one-timer, any scoring chance, even a point shot with a screen, they have to elevate the puck on this guy. Everything has to be up and over the hands. And if they can feel that early in the series, that's going to carry them with some momentum because it's going to be hard to get to him. And stay away from low blocker. Stay away from low blocker. That's his greatest strength. He's got an awesome low blocker. One of the highest save percentages this year was low blocker. So stay away from it would be as much as my message as it is to get them shooting high.
Let's touch base on the goaltending in Edmonton and
While
Winnipeg never wavered off of their number one goalie, Edmonton did with success. So where is Pickard's future now as a number one goalie in Edmonton?
Yeah, look, it could be short-lived, right? Because Vegas, I think, is going to be a handful for the Edmonton Oilers. And I think it's going to be a terrific series. I think it'll be maybe even an easier series for Adin Hill. I thought Minnesota was outstanding. I thought that they took shot quality to another level. They didn't give him any feelers. When you play against the Edmonton Oilers, they actually do shoot the puck a lot to try and get it back. But in that case, it kind of warms the goalies up. As far as Pickard goes, look, I think that Edmonton, with what they are allowing against, they are going to have to be the only team that is in NHL history, I think we could say, that is going to have to outscore their defensive deficiencies all the way to the final. I don't see it happening. I see Vegas taking this series. I think it's going to be too much for Pickard because Edmonton just isn't even close to what they were doing defensively last year. Check this out too, right, guys? The goals that are going in right now are at like an all-time high. The save percentage in the first round of the playoffs, I don't know if you guys saw this today, it's 894, right?
What?
894. The regular season save percentage was 90, right? When I started working at MSG and doing the TV gig was 2014-15. The save percentage was 915, and I remember us always talking about reducing the size of the goalie's equipment. Mm-hmm. We even went on the ice once for a Hockey Night Live show that we produced, and I took the tops, the 2 inches of my pads, down. I cut them off. I sacrificed a pair of goalie pads for this episode because I wanted to prove that the timing was perfect at the time where receiving a shot that the goalie could see wouldn't go in unless they were almost forced to go down a little earlier because they didn't have such big pads protecting their five holes. I'm trying to say that their timing was impeccable. It was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing right now with the increase of the east to west, which we've talked a lot about over the last 5 years, it's gone up 41%. The one big one that I saw in this first round was broken play goals. Up 31% from last year during the playoffs, broken play goals. Now, if you remember the goal that Minnesota scored, it was Hartman on the half wall. Kaprizov was at the far post. And he didn't throw it on net at Adin Hill. He threw it 6 feet away from the net, but across the crease. And it went off Kaprizov's chest and in. We've seen a lot of those broken play goals by design. Coaches refer to this as aiming for, I can't even use the word because we're on television, but let's just call it poop pile. Okay. But, but that's what it is. And that's the message in the room. And it's, if the goalie can see you and you can see him, aim to the pile at the side of the net. And the most dangerous, uncomfortable, miserable feeling is when a player like the Hartman example or goes to the corner and just throws it wide, and I mean wide net front, not on net. Part of the reason why Winnipeg scores the way they do last night, I know it's a missed shot, but it does get to that net front 6 feet away from the net. And guys, those are a nightmare. And I think that that's a big reason why we're seeing these plays end up in the back of the net more frequently. In the first round, we saw Binnington give up 7 broken play goals. Hellebuck gave up 7 broken play goals. Hill gave up 6, Ottinger 6, Kemper 6. Last year in the postseason, in the first round, Vasilevskiy allowed 5. But then nobody else was in that same neighborhood. There was a couple threes, couple twos. Right. But, I mean, it's a big increase, and people are doing it by design. So it's really is, if we're talking about changing the game. And then back to Florida, just in how it relates to how they create offense, I think this is important, too, because we've seen a spike in shooting percentage off of the forecheck. Right now, the best way to score in the playoffs is creating off the forecheck. The shooting percentage is 22.4%. And it's because teams are getting in, they're getting you early, and you're losing your structure, and then they're zipping you east to west. And that's one area that's going to be really important tonight in this game, is not allowing Florida to get in on their forecheck.
Is the cycle making a comeback? The pinwheel?
Bring back the Sedins.
You know what? I'll tell you what, guys, when it comes to goal scoring, I am astonished at how little comes from out of corner right to net.
Really?
Like grade A's just don't, everything, it's almost like the cemetery in there. Everything dies if it doesn't get out quickly. And I've heard coaches refer to that as the cemetery.
So Logan Thompson, Washington versus Freddie Anderson. We don't have to really.
But what's the update on Freddie?
Is Freddie alive? Or is
Freddie's good to go.
He's good to go.
Yeah, he's good to go. He was on with Gord Stellick this morning. I caught it.
Okay.
You recover from the nudge?
He was.
Yes. Oh yeah, he's good. He's good to go.
The major D to the table.
Been on the ice, he said, and it sounded like he's really, well, no, he's never really sounded excited in his whole life, but it was excitement.
Hey, speaking of guys that folded like a cheap suit in the first round, how's your boy Allmark, Sammy?
Oh, my God.
Thanks, Valley. I needed that, buddy.
So let me get this straight. He wanted to go to the World Championships with Sweden, and they said no.
No, I didn't hear that news.
No, you didn't hear that?
I did hear that.
I didn't hear.
Wow. Well, they have a couple other Swedish goalies.
Well, knock one out if, like, he's an $8.5 million goalie.
That
like,
says how a do you, lot. That says a lot right there. I don't know.
Yeah,
I can tell you one thing. Sammy, so I'll share this with you guys. Sammy was nervous during the game, right? So he's texting me, and he's trying to get a feel for if I think Allmark's going to, you know, pull this off. And I just told Sammy, I was like, Sammy, he wants it to be over. Just relax. He wants it to be over.
He was right. He said he's going to steal one, and then he's going to want it to be over. You couldn't have nailed it more. So thank you, Valley.
Exactly.
He was cursing you in text to me when he was stealing one, though. I did get those texts.
I want you to do this just so I want you guys to know this for the future. When you look at the third goal, the game winner, Cleven skates through Allmark, and his hand is still out there trying to let everybody know that he was screened after it went in. It's the biggest poser move of all time. You know, like just holding it out there, just letting it marinate. What are you doing? It was like a 3-second count.
Don't sugarcoat it on our show. Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, I know. That's why I always get myself in trouble.
You certainly do, and it's no better place to do it than our show.
Thanks, buddy.
Valley, great stuff on a Monday, buddy. Enjoy the second round, and we'll speak next week.
All right, boys. Enjoy. Take care.
Appreciate it, Valley. Thanks a lot, man.
The one, the only, Steve Alliquette.
11 more goals than expected.
That's
for Hellebuck. 11.
You shouldn't give up that many.
Yeah. You surprised his feelings on Stolarz? Dropping a little bit of the energy that he's accustomed to seeing?
I've been a Stolarz guy since the first game of the first preseason game. I've loved him.
So,
but I totally see where he's coming from.
Yeah. But you got to give him the benefit of the doubt.
He has to start tonight.
That's kind of where we're at. Is like, I would like to see Wohl get in and he's fresh and all that, but you just have to go with the guy who won you a series.
Yeah, like, I guess you've mentioned this, so maybe it doesn't matter, but I just think the perception of going to Wohl in game one of this series and having him, and you don't think this could happen, but having him be putrid, and then the questioning that would come.
What are you doing?
Why did you do that?
Yeah.
Right? But you think that shouldn't matter, is what you're going to say.
I just think you're the coach and you made your decision,
you got to live with it.
Your part of your job is to forecast some of this before it becomes a story.
Yeah, that's literally your role. Is the guy, right? You're in the line of fire.
You're supposed to get ahead of this.
Yeah.
And if you feel like it's coming on, and that's part of the feeling of Hellebuck, like to have left Hellebuck in on so many occasions, including two other bad blown games by him, is something that could have easily come back to haunt them.
Yes.
And it didn't. Good on them. Move on. He gets the ultimate career-saving mulligan.
Tee it up again, son.
Like, where
have
is he
one.
Today if they lost 3-2 last night?
Oh, my God.
I don't know. If you're Winnipeg, are you doing like the, can we trust this guy? Do we have to trade him? Like, what's becoming of?
That's all that's going on in Winnipeg today if they found a way to lose.
Yeah.
Well,
but that, they didn't. And he gets another chance at
also,
Dallas.
Also, I'd say that Nick Ehlers rules.
And Valley mentioned that the Blues didn't. I mean, they look like a team that gave up a soul-crushing goal to end that game. Like, they had a couple.
Winnipeg dominated.
They had a couple moments in overtime where it felt like they maybe had a chance, but they just didn't have the punch. And like,
I know Kevin Bieksa touched on this, but my first thought was like those stupid icings. Like, when did icings become like having as casual as a beer?
Right.
What is going on?
One out for his teammate to skate onto, and the game's over. But he takes a shot, ices the puck.
Yeah.
Like, eventually, like, they're set plays. They're set plays off of losing a draw. You have a 50-50 chance, if you got a decent centerman, maybe a little bit more, of creating a set play off a face-off in the offensive zone. That is a gift to you.
Yeah.
Why would you give that up so easily? This has got to stop. I don't get it.
Leafs are really guilty of it.
They're pre-programmed that you shoot now. You shoot now. Yeah. And it's like, no. You're trying to win the game. And if that involves a minute and a half, take a shot.
Byfield said today he's going to be thinking about all summer what happened.
What was on
so
the
maybe,
clock?
Maybe he should have cleared it.
1.8?
1.6.
1.6.
1.6.
Like you couldn't, over the course of 60, you couldn't have found another way to burn 1.6 off the clock. You left it on the clock.
Boards and out would have cut it. Boards and out would have done the trick.
I can't imagine what those guys are feeling like today. That's just, that there's nowhere, that's way worse than
Leafs. It probably doesn't feel as bad when you didn't think you had a cup shot.
Sure.
You know?
But like,
but
I
it
mean,
still hurt.
Let me tell you, as a fan of the
didn't have a cup shot.
I don't think St. Louis was in
there. Oh, they had a cup shot. No, I'm telling you, they're right in there.
All right.
That Bennington,
he was great in overtime.
Oh my God, he was fantastic.
Yeah.
That goaltender could have given you a chance against Dallas or Vegas or Edmonton. I'm telling you, St. Louis was right there.
You blew it.
I kind of wanted the Canadian goalie to get it.
Of course
it
you do.
I did. But I was rooting for the
Canadian
Jets.
Team.
I'm sorry.
No.
Listen.
No. Canadian team over Canadian goalie.
I'm really hoping that Connor Hellebuck can build on his incredible first round all the way to starting for Team America in the Olympics next year. I'm really hoping for that. Anyways, it's game time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. So the four series are set, as we know, and the series numbers, the Carolina Hurricanes are, to me, surprisingly huge favorites.
Yeah.
What do you think? Their number, they are minus 180.
Over the Capitals?
Yes, they are.
The Capitals finished second in the league this year?
They are minus 180. The Caps in that series are a plus 150 underdog, which to me is a pretty surprising number.
I would take that. You guys don't think Carolina's going to win the series, do you?
I haven't decided. I think we can maybe do some picks, but
all right, we'll pick later.
I think it's two very different styles. That could be a fascinating matchup. I have really no idea. Edmonton Oilers versus Vegas Golden Knights, a lot closer. Minus 105 for the Oilers, minus 115 for the Vegas Golden Knights. Leafs, just as big underdogs as the Washington Capitals are, according to Bet365, plus 150 in this series. Florida, minus 180. So that's
big dogs.
Hopefully, Berube's showing them our Bet365 segment.
They got the nobody believed in us card for the first time in a while.
And the Winnipeg Jets go into their series with the Dallas Stars as big dogs, plus 145. Yeah. The President's Trophy winning team, plus 145 underdogs going up against the Dallas Stars, who are minus 170. And boy, they seem like they could be a bit of a wagon.
Miro's coming back.
Getting Jason Robertson back. That's maybe not the team you want to face. Anyways. That was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. It's 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Okay, we'll catch our breath, pay a few bills, and when we return, plenty of NHL news and notes, including last night, one of the biggest breaking news during the Winnipeg-St. Louis game was John Garrett announcing that Sidney Crosby's going to the World Championships.
That was a remarkable moment. Or John was just like, yeah, I read this is happening.
And he read it. Ryan, I thought he broke the news.
Ryan was like, yeah, that is happening.
Jeff Fan's like, oh, my God.
It is an interesting fact.
I love it.
LA Kings need a new general manager.
Nice scoop there, Scoopsie.
And we still got to get into
Rantanen,
which now may be regarded as one of the more memorable, worst trades in NHL history.
Doesn't usually come back at you that fast.
We will get into that when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective, Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. I think Mark Messier's got enough material for his Game 7 production company.
Wow, good call. Man.
Okay. Mikko Rantanen.
Oh, my God.
What are they saying? The moose is on the loose was the phrase. 11 points in the last three games.
First hat trick in the third period of a game 7 in NHL history.
The first thing I thought of when they closed the game out was like this is Mark Messier for me all over again. Just one guy to give you the feel that it ain't over until I say it's over. And he did not guarantee the win, but that was the only thing missing. When I compared it to Mark Messier's hat trick, which was not in the third period, and this one was the first one in NHL history in a Game 7 third period.
This is like the stuff you wake up from a dream from and go, oh, I wish that was real. Like you get traded and have your heart ripped out over how much money we don't know, but we don't think it was a ton. And they trade you to Carolina, and Carolina ships you back to the division rival. And you do that to them in Game 7. And now it's like they're talking about firing the GM. Like, you know, there's articles. I read Arif Dean wrote one that said this should cost McFarland his job in Colorado. Like, you got revenge so swiftly. It's almost never been done before.
That is the most, like, singular backfire moment maybe in sports history. Like there's
McKinnon's
been
ton- just like, what just happened?
There's been tons of trades that are awful and have worked out bad for teams. But to have it be like that, like, can you
remember? La histoire du hockey.
I can't remember.
Nothing like
that. Nothing like
They're
that.
They're up 2-0 in the
game
period.
The game was over. They had nothing going. And then Rantanen splits the puck in two on the bar, going bar down so hard, and then it's on.
It's on.
I know I know a lot of people are pointing to Chris McFarlane on this, but everything that I've gathered is that it does fall. The decision to move Rantanen needs to fall on Joe Sakic owning that decision.
How come?
He's the president. He's the one in charge. He's the one that decided that we are better off without him than with him.
But then you're neutering all GMs and saying you're rendering them all lame ducks if they can't make decisions and it comes down to the president.
No, they can make decisions, but this one was one of the most important decisions. And whether you're any other president, Cam Neely in Boston, Brendan Shanahan in Toronto, Joe Sakic, Stevie Yzerman, the buck stops with you. You want to trade a superstar for your team. That ultimately lands on the president's desk. And it just goes back. Like all this loss does now for Colorado fans is want to go back and go, like, what the heck happened here?
That's how I feel right now. And it was the next thing I was going to say is like, I need a 30 for 30, like a behind the scenes. And like, how do you we're better without without Rantanen?
That's the ultimate decision that Joe Sakic made. He did not feel moving forward that this guy was a true difference maker. And I think this is just a lesson for a lot of people. And maybe Joe bought into this, that he's not that good. And you watch him in Carolina and then you watch him early in Dallas. And there are legitimate questions like, what's going on here? But the ones that really believed that this guy was only good because of Nate McKinnon have no idea about these type of players and the effect that they can have on a hockey club. This guy does not do what he's done for 7 or 8 years in Colorado, make himself one of the best wingers in the game today, be at the peak of his career at age 27 and 28, and then fall off the face of the earth.
No.
It does not happen, people. It does not happen. And it's not because Nate McKinnon, he's playing with Nate McKinnon. This guy went to Carolina, which he never wanted to go, because he was brokenhearted, man. That's not where he wanted to be. He had no illusions of ever being there longer than he had to be to get him to free agency. And it affected his play.
Sure, that's understandable. And Kip, this guy didn't have a year. Was it Chichu at 55 one year or something like that? Or
oh, yeah, when he played with Thornton.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like, that's not this. He had 92 points, 105 points, 104 points. If you think McKinnon helped him, okay, he helped him 20 points. Now he's a 90-point player or whatever. It's like at 6'4", 220.
With 12 points in the first round, now up to 113 points in 88 playoff games.
So the 30-30 that you're talking about would go back and it would tell the story of a guy that never wanted to leave there and what he did to want to stay there.
So what is it, McKinnon's number? Was that the thing? They didn't want to pay him more than McKinnon?
Quite possibly, but he had made it clear to them that it didn't have to. The story that I had heard, that the agents set the market at $13 million.
Right.
They stuck predominantly for the whole season at Pasternak's number, 11-2.
Okay.
You're Pasternak, buddy. That's what they told him. 11-2. Okay.
And he's going, Pasternak's underpaid,
buddy. The agents are going $13 million. The agents are also saying low 80s on the salary cap when he signed. This guy's in the mid 90s. Okay. The bar's moved. Mm-hmm. It's not 11-2. And then I believe that their last offer came in around 11-6. And now the agents are at 13, or Rantanen's at 13 on a fair market price for him. And then Rantanen got involved. He went back to the office and said, I am flexible.
Mm-hmm.
We can work this out. And then 48 hours to 72 hours later, traded to Carolina.
Oh, my. The number he signed with in Dallas is 12. And I understand there's a tax difference, but give him 12.5.
He would have signed at 12. all day long. I'm telling you.
That is fireable to me.
All day long.
Oh.
I can sit here with a straight face and look at both of you and said, that same contract would have got it done in Colorado.
Oh, and my God. You know what, though? You know what's going to happen if that's understood in the dressing room? You're going to lose Nate MacKinnon.
Do you understand that it is understood? Did you hear Nate's comments after the game?
So I don't know what we're going
to
do.
We lost to a team without their best defenseman and their best forward. I don't know what we're going to do. That's
my best friend who's put
you know who ended the player like saying? They had.
I don't know what you guys are going to do.
Trade for Sid. That help?
He is pissed. Nate today is pissed.
You know, it's like franchise altering stuff because MacKinnon is so competitive and he just watched the very guy that he needed traded from his team and then beat him in the prime of his career.
They were magic together.
And
they were absolutely magic together.
You know, you might have to do something in terms of making a change above him to keep him happy. Because if he is very, as upset as I think he might be at McFarland or Sakic or whomever, you don't want him to be like, well, then, you know, you guys messed this up so bad, I just can't look you in the eye.
He's still, in all honesty, he's underpaid at 12.
Of course he is. He was underpaid. I was thinking that this
right?
morning, too.
He's like, underpaid
how is
at 12.
He again underpaid?
So, Colorado thinks, get him out of the division, right? Get him out of the West. We're going to send him to Carolina. He goes to Carolina, and now he's had no intentions of really signing there. They found that out. Now they got to move him. There's only two places he can go to. Dallas and Toronto. Toronto had the room and the Toronto had the assets. And for those of you that think that it was just Mitch Marner or bust, not true. Multiple offers, multiple assets were offered. You know what Rantanen says? Mm. I'm going to Dallas. You know why I want to go to Dallas? Because I want to jam it down Colorado's throat. I want them not only... Do I want to play them in the playoffs? I want to go in for the next 8 years into that organization three times a season. And they got to look at me because I'm coming after them.
Jeez.
Those were his words in a roundabout way.
Yeah.
Well, he said something when he skated by the bench too, which I'm sure was pretty impassioned.
Yeah. Damn.
That's Mikko Rantanen.
Oh, I don't know if you saw it or not, but Sid would have gone to the World Championship.
Hey, how mad do you think McFarland and Sakic are at Tulski for trading him right back into their eyeball, which they obviously intended not to do?
Too bad.
I understand it.
You lost the. You let the asset
You know what
go.
That is? That's a lesson for every general manager
you
out
trade
there.
A guy, you lose the right to complain about where he ends up.
It was just... like the perfect storm that went against, that looked like it was okay for them and then turned around and just bit them.
Sure did.
That was amazing. That was an amazing.
It is. It's a fascinating story that it should come out.
Best game seven.
It should come out in a 30 for 30.
Can I say though, I mentioned a little bit in the Leafs Hour, the call on Jack Drury in the third period at that point of the game was a war crime.
Didn't care for it.
Are you kidding me? It's game seven. He got a little tug on him. They both fall to the ice, and you set up the power play, and he shoots it in the net immediately. That was an insanely bad call.
Yeah.
Insanely bad call.
Insanely bad call.
So it was Jack Drury, you say, huh?
Right.
How'd they end up with him?
Oh.
Ouchie. Yes.
As a reminder, this hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. So I don't know if it's a really well-kept secret.
You got 90 seconds.
That Rob Blake, we're going to part ways. So Rob Blake all this time was signing one-year deals, eh?
Really?
So, and it was always presented to him as, you know, anytime you want to spend more time with your family or go in a different direction, you have that flexibility. So not sure we should be too surprised.
Yeah, that makes some sense.
World Championships?
Yep.
Marc-Andre Fleury going. He won't retire.
Gosh. got to keep playing hockey.
Do you know what he said? I don't think he likes his family. That's what I think.
You know what he said? He said, I went home. The kids were a little crazy.
Yeah, he said, right? Championships.
See ya.
Maybe I should play longer. He's in the Swiss A-League next year.
All right, round two. Toronto Maple Leafs, Florida Panthers right here on the network. Do not go away. Enjoy your night. We're back tomorrow on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.